I say unto you, lecture number 3, 23rd of October, 1977, at the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh Ashram, Pune.
Bhagwan, Jesus said unto his disciples, therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her, hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out, and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil. But whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. Ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbour, and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you, and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if ye love them that love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect.
Moses brought love to the world. Jesus brings love. Moses is a must before Jesus can be possible. Law is enforced love. Love is a spontaneous law. Law is from the outside. Love is from the inside. Love is without. Love is within. Law is without. Love is within. Love can happen only when a certain order, a certain discipline, a certain law exists. Love cannot exist in the jungle. Moses civilizes man, Jesus spiritualizes man. That's why Jesus says again and again, I have come not to destroy, but to fulfill. Moses gives commandments. Jesus gives insight into those commandments. One can follow the commandments on a formal, superficial level. One can become a righteous person, a Puritan, a moralist, and deep down nothing changes. All remains the same. The old darkness is still there. The old unconsciousness is still there. Nothing has really changed, just you have painted your surface. Now you are wearing a beautiful mask. Nothing wrong in wearing a beautiful mask. If you have an ugly face, it is better not to say it to others. Why be so hard on others? If you have an ugly face, wear a mask. At least it will save others seeing you. But the mask cannot change your ugly face. Never forget for a single moment. The mask is not your face. You have to transform your face too. Moses gives a very crude discipline to the society. He could not have done better. There was no way. Human consciousness existed in a very, very primitive way. A little bit of civilization was more than one can expect. But Moses prepared the way. And Jesus is the fulfillment. What Moses started, Jesus completes. Moses has put the foundation. Jesus raises the whole temple. Those stones in the foundation have to be crude and ugly. Only on those crude and ugly stones, a beautiful marble temple can be built. Always remember this, that Jesus is not against Moses. But Jews misunderstood him. Because Moses talks about law and Jesus talks about love. To the Jews, particularly the priests, the politicians, it appeared that law will be destroyed by Jesus. Hence they are angry. And they are right too. Law would be destroyed in a sense. Because a higher law will be coming in. The lower law will have to go. The lower has to cease for the higher to come. The law depends on fear. The law depends on greed. The law punishes you. The central idea of law is justice. But justice is not enough. Because justice is crude and hard, violent. Only compassion can bloom your being, can help you come to your highest peak, not justice. Law is better than lawlessness. But compared to love, law itself is lawlessness. Compared to love, it is relative. Because law depends on the same evils against which it fights. Somebody murders, then the law murders him. Now it is the same thing that you are doing to the person that he has done to somebody else. It is not higher, although it is just, but it is not religious. It has no spirituality in it. It is mathematical. He has killed somebody, the law kills him. But if killing is wrong, then how law can be right? If killing in itself is wrong, then law is very much lacking. It depends on the same evils. Remember it. When Jesus started talking about love, the people who have been law abiding became very much afraid. Because they know if the law is dropped, then their animal hidden behind them will come up and will tear down the whole society. They know that their faces are only on the surface beautiful, deep down great ugliness. And when Jesus says, drop all masks, they became afraid. They became angry. This man is dangerous. This man has to be punished and destroyed before he destroys the whole society. But they misunderstood. Jesus is not saying just to drop the mask. He is saying, I have brought you an alchemy so that your real face can be beautiful. Why carry the mask? Why this weight? Why this false plastic thing? I can give you a higher law that needs no fears, that needs no greed, that needs no enforcement from the outside. But it arises in your being because of understanding, not because of fear. Remember, that is the difference. Out of fear is law. Out of understanding is love. Moses is a must, but Moses must go also. Moses has done his work. He has prepared the ground. When Jesus appears, Moses' work is fulfilled. But Jews were angry. It is very difficult for people to uncling themselves from their past. Moses has become very, very central to the Jewish mind. They thought Jesus is against Moses. And this has been so down the ages, the misunderstanding. People thought in India, Hindus thought in India, Buddha is against the Vedas. The same problem. Exactly the same. Buddha is not against the Vedas. In a sense, yes. Only in a sense. He is bringing something from the death. And once that death becomes available to you, Vedas will not be needed, so he looks against. He will make Vedas meaningless. And that is the whole purpose of Jesus. To fulfill Moses and still to make Moses meaningless. The new dispensation has come in. Jesus was a man of love, of immense love. He loved this earth. He loved the smell of this earth. He loved the trees. He loved the people. He loved the creatures because that is the only way to love the creators. If you cannot praise the painting, how can you praise the painters? If you cannot praise the poetry, how can you praise the poet? Jesus is very affirmative. He says, and he knows one very significant fact, and that he brings again and again into his sayings, that God is an abstraction. You cannot stand face to face to God. God is as much an abstraction as humanity is. Whenever you come across human beings, never across humanity. You meet this human being, that human being, but never humanity. You always come across the concrete. You will never come across the abstract God. Because he will not have any face. He will be facelessness. You will not be able to recognize him. Then where to find him? Look into each eye. that you come across. Look into each being that you come across. This is God in concrete form. God materialized. Everybody here is an incarnation of God. The rocks and the trees and the people and all. Love these people. Love these trees, these stars. And through that love, you will start feeling the immensity of being. But you will have to go through a small door of a particular being. Jesus has been very much misunderstood. He was misunderstood by the Jews. And he was the climax of their intelligence, for which they had waited for ages. And when he came, he was rejected. And then he has been even more misunderstood by the Christians. A great e-sayer has been converted into a no-sayer. Christians have depicted Jesus as very sad, a long face, in great misery, as if he is being tortured. This is false. This is not true about Jesus. It cannot be true about Jesus. Otherwise, who else will laugh? And who else will love? And who else will celebrate? Jesus is a celebration of being. And the highest celebration possible. Remember it. Then only you will be able to understand these sutras. An immensely beautiful anecdote. Jesus was on the cross. And below, St. Patrick was praying for his soul as soon his master would die. Jesus called down to St. Patrick, "Patrick, come up here. There is something I must tell you." Patrick, not looking up, replied, "Lord, to be sure, I cannot, for I am praying for your soul that I am." Jesus again calls a little louder with a hint of urgency. "Patrick, for Christ's sake, stop this nonsense and come up. It is very important what I must tell you." "Lord, I cannot. Have not I told you? I am praying for your soul, Bejabers." Jesus again, almost shouting, "Patrick, for the last time I say, come up here. It is of utmost urgency. You cannot offer to miss." Patrick reluctantly relents and saying under his breath, "God damn it, this man is a fool asking me to go up there when I am busy praying for his soul." He goes off to fetch a ladder. He puts up the ladder against the cross and with a slow, deliberate reluctance climbs rung after rung till he reaches the top. "Well, Master, here I am. Now, will you tell me that it is that, what it is that you brought me all the way up here for?" "Look, Patrick," Jesus says, "over beyond those trees, you can see our house." Jesus dying on the cross and says, "Look beyond those trees. Can you see our house?" He was immensely in love with this earth. That is the only way to be in love with God. There is no other way. If you deny existence, intrinsically you are denying God. If you say no to life, you have said no to God, because it is God's life. And always remember, God has no lips of his own. He kisses you through somebody else's lips. He has no hands of his own. He embraces you through somebody else's hands. He has no eyes of his own, because all eyes are his. He looks at you through somebody's eyes. he sees you through somebody's eyes and he is seen by your eyes. And he goes on seeing through your eyes too. Quakers rightly say that God has nothing else but you. Only you. That's what God has. This insight has to penetrate deeply. Only then you will be able to understand the sayings of Jesus. Otherwise you will miss, as Christians have been missing down the ages. Let this become the very foundation stone, that life is God. And then things will become very, very simple. Then you will have the right perspective. Say yes. And suddenly you feel a kind of prayer arising in you. Have you tried it? Sitting silently, doing nothing. It starts swaying in a kind of inner dance. And start saying yes. Yes. Go into it. Let it come from your very heart. Let it spread on your whole being. Let it throb into your heartbeat. Let it pulsate into your blood. Let it electrify you. This yes. And you will be surprised, for the first time you have tasted what prayer is. The English word, yes, can become a great mantra. It is. The very sound of it is E saying. The very sound of it creates an affirmation in the heart. Say no. Sometimes try the polar opposite. Sitting silently, say no. No. Go into it. Let your whole being say no. And you will see the difference. When you will be saying no, you will be angry. When you will go on saying no, you will become a rage. When you will go on saying no, you will feel you are cut from existence. Separate, isolated, alienated. The bridge has disappeared. And particularly the modern mind is a no-saying mind. Descartes, the French philosopher, has said, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. The modern mind says, I say no, therefore I am. It is a no-saying mind. It goes on saying no. No creates the ego. You cannot create the ego without saying no. You can create the ego only by saying no more and more. Ego separates. Ego makes you irreligious. Because ego takes you away from the whole. And you start thinking that you are a whole unto yourself. You forget that you exist in an immense complexity. That you are part of a vast universe. That you are not an island. No man is an island. We are all parts of an infinite continent. Yes saying bridges you with the continent. Yes saying bridges you with God. Say more yes and you will become more religious. Let yes be your church, your temple. And Jesus is the e-sayer. Even on the cross dying, he says, look beyond those trees. Can you see our house? And this is his last moment. But his love for existence, for life, is still there. Radiantly there. In the last moment, he prays to God, Father, forgive these people because they don't know what they are doing. They exactly knew what they were doing. They knew they are killing. But that is not the point when Jesus says they don't know what they are doing. He is saying that they are so asleep, so confined in their egos. They have lost their eyes, Father. They don't have any consciousness. I can see great darkness in their hearts. Forgive them. They are not responsible. This is the voice of love. He is not condemning them. Ordinarily he would have prayed, destroy all these people. They are destroying your only begotten son. Kill them immediately, right now. Come like a thunderbolt. Shower like fires. Burn them here and now. Show them what they are doing to your son. That may have been just. But that was not right for Jesus. Jesus does not exist at the level of justice. He exists at the level of compassion. Compassion forgives, justice punishes. And when you punish, you create in the other's mind great anger. He will watch for his own time to take the revenge and with a vengeance. Only love creates reconciliation, because love does not create any change. Anger, fear, violence, aggression, punishment, all create ugly chains. And one thing leads still into deeper darkness, into deeper gloom. Jesus' whole message is yes. He says yes to his own death, accepts it, welcomes it. Because this is the will of his God. Then let it be so. He relaxes into it. You are not relaxed even in life, and he relaxes into death too. That was the last test. And he passed through it victoriously. Death is the only criterion. The only touchstone where really a man is known, what he was, of what metal he was made. It is very easy to talk about love. It is difficult to love, because love is a cross. It is very easy to talk about compassion, but to be committed to compassion, one has to lose all. Just the other day, I was reading this anecdote. Uncle C and Aunt Rose were up in years, but they still prayed every night. Their prayer was always, Lord, when you are ready for us, take us, we are ready. A group of playful boys heard their prayers and decided to have a little fun. They got on top of the house and talked down the chimney in a deep voice, See? See, Aunt Rose asked, what do you want? The voice answered, I want C. Who are you? I am from the Lord, and I have come for C. Well, he aren't here. He is gone. Well, I will just have to take you, Aunt Rose, instead of C, if he is not there. Get out from under that bed, C, said Aunt Rose sharply. You know he knows you are there. When death comes, then one forgets everything. For years they have been praying, Lord, we are ready whenever you are ready. And now the Lord is ready. Now Aunt Rose is not ready to go. I have heard an old Sufi parable. An old man is coming from the forest. He is a woodcutter. He is carrying a big load of wood. And he is really old, 70, 80, tired of life. And many times he used to say to the sky, "Where is death? Why don't you come to me? I have nothing left to live here. I'm just dragging. Do you want me to commit suicide? That will be a sin. Why can't you come easily?" Again and again he will pray, "Death, come and take me, I'm finished." And in fact, there was nothing to live. He was an old man and nobody to look after him. No money left. Every day he will have to go to the forest and cut wood, sell it and somehow manage for bread and butter. But that day it happened, the death was passing by, and he asked suddenly, he threw his load of the wood, shouted to the sky, "The death, where are you? You come to everybody. I have seen so many people dying. Why you are so angry with me? Why don't you come to me? Come on, I am ready." And by chance the death was passing. So death came, appeared before him, and he said, "Okay, so what do you want?" And he started trembling. He said, "Nothing else. Just I am an old man, and I am unable to take this load on my head, and there is nobody else to support me. You please just help me to put this load on my head. Thank you." And for years he was praying for death. In fact, he was not praying for death. He was not aware what he was doing. Jesus is fully aware. And yet, for a moment, he wavers. So what to say of other people? For a moment, he wavers on the cross. And he says to God, "Why you have forsaken me? Why? What wrong I have committed? Why you are so far away? Why this is being done to me?" For a single moment he wavers, even at that stage. So what to say about ordinary human beings? But he saw the point. He was a man of perception, great insight, and relaxed and said, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Do whatsoever you wanted." He effaced himself utterly. In that moment, Jesus died and Christ was born. To me, in that moment, the resurrection has happened, not after the crucifixion. In that moment, the discontinuity has happened. Jesus has disappeared. The moment he said, "Thy will be done," that is the death of Jesus. Death of any self-sense. Jesus seized that moment. He became Christ. This is the real resurrection. The other thing may be just a parable. Meaningful, but not historical. A myth. Pregnant with great significance, but not factual. But this is the real fact. Just a moment before he was wavering, afraid, trembling, and a moment later he has settled and relaxed. He has surrendered. That moment he is no more separate from God. When your will is separate from God, you are separate from God. When your will has been surrendered into God's will, then you are not separate. Then His will is the only will. These sutras. "Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gifts before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to the brother, and then come and offer thy gifts. Jesus says, if you come to the temple with flowers, with offering, to pray, to surrender to God, and you remember that somebody is angry at you, you have done something, you have angered somebody, then the first necessity is go back and be reconciled to your brother. All are withered brothers here, remember, because the Father is one. The trees are your brothers. That's how Saint Francis used to talk to the trees. Sisters, brothers, the fish, the seagull, the rocks, the mountains, all are your brothers, because they all come from one source. Jesus is saying that if you are not reconciled with the world, you cannot come to pray to God. How can you come to the Father if you are not even reconciled with the brother, and the brother is concrete and the Father is abstract? The brother exists and the Father is hidden. The brother is manifest and the Father is not manifest. How can you reconcile with the unmanifest? You have not been even capable of reconciling with the manifest. This is a meaningful sentence. It does not mean only your brothers. It does not even mean only human beings. It means the whole existence, wherever you have been offending. If you have been cruel to anybody, a great Zen master Rinzai was sitting. A man came. He pushed the door very hard. He must have been angry. He slammed the door. He was not in good mood. Then he threw his shoes and came in. Rinzai said, wait, you don't come in. First you go and ask forgiveness from the door and from your shoes. The man says, what are you talking about? I have heard that these Zen people are mad, but it seems true. I was thinking it is just rumor. What nonsense you are talking. Why should I ask forgiveness from the door? And it looks so embarrassing. And those shoes are mine. Then Rinzai says, you get out. Never come again here. If you can be angry at the shoes, why cannot you ask their forgiveness? When you were angry, you never thought that this is so foolish to be angry with the shoes. If you can relate with anger, then why not with love? Relationship is relationship. Anger is a relationship. When you slam the door with such anger, you related with the door. You behaved wrongly, immorally, and the door has not done anything to you. You go first, otherwise don't come in. Under the impact of Rinzai's silence and the people sitting there and that presence, like a flash, the man understood. He understood the logic of it. It was so clear that if you can be angry, then why cannot you be loving? You go. And he went. Maybe in his whole life, that was the first time he touched the door. And tears started flowing from his eyes. He could not hold those tears. And when he bowed down to his own shoes, a great change happened in him. The moment he turned and came towards Rinzai, Rinzai took him in his arms, embraced him. This is reconciliation. How can you pray if you are unreconciled? How can you come to a master if you are unreconciled with existence? Jesus says, therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift. Now the altar is secondary, the prayer is secondary, because right now you are not in the mood to pray. One has to earn prayer by being reconciled with existence. One earns prayer. Prayer is not just that you go into the temple and you do it. It is not a kind of doing. It is an arousal into consciousness of unknown peaks. But that is possible only if you are reconciled. Relax with existence. Now this is something absolutely different than what Christians have been doing down the ages. They are not reconciled. They are not reconciled even with their own bodies. What to say of others? They are not reconciled even with their own existence. They have great condemnation in them. With that condemnation, how can they pray? Their prayer will be just so-so, lukewarm, will not transform them. Prayer is a magic formula. It is a mantra. It is a spell. But it has to be provoked in the right moment. You cannot pray any time, any place. You have to get into the right tuning. That's why all the religions have chosen particular moments. Early morning, when the sun is just going to rise. More possibility of getting into tune with existence. The whole night you have slept. For 8 hours at least. You have not been in the world. For 8 hours at least, you have not been in the business. You have not been cutting each other's throats. For 8 hours at least, you have been in a relaxed state, fast asleep. When you rise in the morning, your eyes are clear and less clouds in your being. There is a kind of innocence. Not only in you, it is all around. The trees are innocent. They have also rested. The dew drops on the leaves is innocent. The sky is innocent. The birds are innocent. And the sun is rising. Again, a new day. With great innocence, everything is coming back out of the primordial source. Refreshed, rejuvenated. That's why religions have decided Brahma Muhurta, early morning, before sun rises. Because with the sun, it starts rising many things in you. Because sun is great energy. When it starts pouring into you, it brings all your desires alive, all your quarrels alive. Again, you are moving into the world. So the morning has been chosen just as the easiest point from where you can be tuned to existence. But prayer can be done only when you are tuned. And Jesus is saying a very, very psychologically valid thing. If you remember while before the altar that somebody you have angered and somebody is still carrying a wound because of you, somebody is angry somewhere, then go help the person to heal. bring things to a reconciliation. Henry Thoreau was dying, and his old aunt came to see him. And she said, "Henry, are you reconciled to God?" And Henry opened his eyes and said, "But I don't remember that I had any quarrel with him ever. I have never quarreled with him." But this very few people can say. Henry Thoreau was very saintly, very holy. You are quarreling every day. Remember, with whomsoever you are quarreling with God, because nothing else exists. Your life is a continuous quarrel. And then those quarrels go on accumulating. They go on poisoning your system, your being. And then one day you want to pray, and the prayer looks so false on your lips. It doesn't come. It does not fit. It is not possible for you to pray suddenly. You will have to prepare for it. The first preparation Jesus says is, be reconciled to your brothers. And to your brothers means all human beings, animals, birds. The whole existence is your brother, because we come out of one source, out of one father or one mother. This whole multiplicity comes out of unity. So, remember, God can be loved only through man. You will never meet God. You will always meet man. Once you have started loving God through man, then you can go still deeper. You can love God through animals, and then still deeper. You can love God through trees, and still deeper. You can love God through mountains and rocks. And when you have learned how to love God through all His forms, then only your love is changed into prayer. To me, these three words are very significant: sex, love, and prayer. Sex is a reconciliation of your body with other bodies. Let me repeat, sex is a reconciliation between your body and other bodies. That's why it is so satisfying. That's why it brings so thrill to you, so excitement, such relaxation, such calm. But it is the lowest reconciliation. If you don't know higher, any higher, then it is okay. But you are living in your house, not knowing that your house has many other rooms, and you are living only in a dark cell. And you think this is all. And there are many rooms in your house, beautiful. But you will remain a beggar, because you will remain only in the body. The body is only your porch, the porch of the palace. But sex brings joy, because it is a reconciliation between two material bodies. Two bodies vibrate in one tune. There is a song, a physical song. A poetry arises between the two energies of the bodies. They dance together, hand in hand. They embrace each other. They are lost into each other. For a few moments, there is ecstasy. Then it disappears, because bodies cannot melt into each other. They are very solid for that. Then second thing is love. Love is reconciliation between two minds, two psychological energies. Love is higher, deeper, greater. If you can love a person, by and by you will see sex is disappearing between you. Western people become very much afraid of that phenomenon. Every day, some couple or other comes to me and they say, what is happening to us? We have become more loving, but why sex is disappearing? Because they have been taught that sex and love are synonymous. They are not. And they have been taught if you love the person more, then you will be more sexually involved with the person. Just the reverse is the true case. If you love the person more, sex will start disappearing. Because you are getting a higher reconciliation. Who bothers for the lower? This is more satisfying, brings greater contentment, more lasting joy. And the third state of love energy is prayer. That is reconciliation between one soul and the soul of existence. That is the highest reconciliation. There is none beyond. So when that happens, the so-called love also starts disappearing. Just as when love happens, sex starts disappearing. And I am not condemning sex. There is nothing wrong in it. It is perfectly beautiful, healthy, in its own place. But when the higher energy comes, the lower starts disappearing. There is no need for it. Its work is finished. It is like a child has become grown up in the mother's womb, 9 months old. Now he is ready to get out of the womb. Those 9 months were beautiful. He will be grateful to his mother for his whole life. He cannot repay the debt. But now he is ready to get out of it. That womb cannot contain it anymore. The child has begun to become bigger than the womb. Exactly like that happens. If you really go deep into sex, a moment comes when your love is more than the sex can contain. Then you start overflowing. You start moving higher. And soon you are out of sex. One day, again it happens. When love is too much, you start overflowing into prayer. And then love disappears. There is a very, very beautiful parable told about Jesus. Meditate over it. This is a very curious episode in which Christ 3 times asks Peter, do you love me? Peter affirms with increasing earnestness. What is the significance of this apparently pointless repetition? Why 3 times? One is enough. You ask somebody, do you love me? And he says yes or no, and it is finished. Why repeat 3 times? First, that the 3 is the symbol of those 3 layers. Sex, love, prayer. Actually, the 3 questions are not identical in the original. But English is a poor language. Poor language compared to any ancient language. Because English is more scientific, more mathematical. And the old languages were not scientific, were not mathematical. That was their beauty. They were poetical. So there were many meanings to a single word. And there were many words for the single meaning too. It was more fluid. More possibility. The original cannot be said that the 3 questions are all identical. They are not. There are 2 distinct words for love used. Christ's original question uses the verb
agapao, which means a state of love, not a relationship. When Jesus says, are you in love with me? He is saying, are you in prayer with me? He is asking the highest. The difference has to be understood. A relationship is a lower state. The highest state of love is not a relationship at all. It is simply a state of your being. Just as trees are green, a lover is loving. They are not green for particular persons. It is not that when you go, they become green. The flower goes on spreading its fragrance, whether anybody comes or not, whether anybody appreciates or not. The flower does not start releasing its fragrance when it sees that a great poet is coming by. Now this man will appreciate. Now this man will be able to understand, who am I? And he does not close his doors when he looks that a stupid, idiot person is passing by, insensitive, dull, a politician or something like that. He does not close itself. What is the point? Why waste pulse before the swine? No, the flower goes on spreading its fragrance. It is a state, not a relationship. When Jesus asks for the first time, do you love me, Peter? He uses the word agapao. It means, are you in a state of love with me? A state of love with me. Jesus means, has your love for me become your love for the whole? Have I become the door for the whole, for the divine? Do you love me? Not as a person, but only as a representative of God. Do you look into me, my Father? Can you see into me, God Himself? That is the meaning of agapao. It implies prayer, compassion. Compassion is a beautiful word. It comes from the same root, passion. When passion becomes compassion, passion is a relationship. It is a desire to be related. It is a need. It creates dependence, bondage, and all kinds of misery come in its wake. Compassion is the same energy, but no more hankering to relate. Not that it does not relate, but that desire is gone. Compassion is a state where you can be alone and perfectly happy, absolutely happy. You can be happy with people, you can be happy alone, then you have attained to the state of compassion. But if you cannot be happy alone and you can be only happy with someone, then it is passion. Then you are dependent. And then you will be angry with the person without whom you cannot be happy naturally. You will be angry. That's why lovers are angry at each other, continuously angry. Because nobody can like one's bondage. Freedom is the ultimate value in human soul. So anything that degrades you from your freedom, creates a confinement around you, you hate. That's why lovers continuously hate each other. And the psychologists have come to see that the love relationship is not a simple love relationship. Now they call it love-hate relationship. Because the hate is always there. So why call it only love? Between the friend and the enemy, there is not much difference. With the friend, your relationship is love-hate. And with the enemy, your relationship is hate-love. That's the only difference. Just the difference of the emphasis. Love is on the top, and hate hidden behind it, it is friendship. Hate has come on the top, and love has gone behind it. It is enmity. Watch it, observe it. Compassion means you have come beyond the necessity to depend on anybody else. Now you can share because you don't need. You can share only when you don't need. You can give only when you don't need. Beggars can't be givers. If you are hankering for that somebody should give you love, how can you give? You can at the most pretend, and the same is the situation from the other side. The other is also pretending that she or he loves you, so that you can love her. Now both are deceiving each other. That's why honeymoons cannot be very long. How long you can deceive? How long? The more intelligent you are, the smaller will be the honeymoon. If you are really, really intelligent, then the first night will be enough. You will be finished. You will see through and through that you are a beggar and she is a beggar. And both beggars are asking to be fulfilled by each other. And they don't have anything. They are just pretending, promising. That promising is only in order to get. But nobody has it in the first place. So nobody gets it. And sooner or later, one starts looking through the pretensions. Then the wife is angry because she has been deceived. And the husband is angry because he has been deceived. And nobody really has deceived. Beggars cannot be the givers. You can share only when you have. Compassion can be shared. Because one is overflowing with it. Like a cloud full of rainwater. Ready to shower. So the first question Jesus asks, do you love me? He uses the word agapao. Agapao is compassion. Agapao is conscious love. Love through understanding, not love through infatuation. Love through awareness, not love through an unconscious liking, because you like the shape of the woman, or you like the nose of the man, or you like the hair color, or the eyes. These are all silly things. How can love happen through these things? Love is not a liking. It is an understanding. It is not emotional. When it has immense intelligence in it, has compassion in it, then in that intensity of compassion, agapao happens. Peter's reply uses the word philo. Peter says, yes, my Lord, I love you. But he uses another word. He does not use agapao. He uses philo. The word that exists in philosophy. Or the word that exists in philanthropist. Philo. which has the quality of personal affection. It is a relationship, not a state. It is not conscious, it is unconscious. One rises in agapao and one falls in philo. That's why we say falling in love. You stumble in it. You go down in it. You fall into a dark pit through it. Philo is unconscious. It is not out of alertness, awareness, understanding, observation. It is not out of an integrated soul. It is not out of individuation. It is out of some hidden impulses, instincts, infatuation. It is lust. A second time Christ asked the question, is still using the word agapao. The master goes on and on hammering. Peter has missed. It was so simple. But you also go on missing the same way, remember. He was not aware that Jesus is using one word and he is answering through another word. It was just the unconscious thing. Second time Jesus has to ask again. Again he uses the word agapao so that Peter can hear it. Maybe now he hears. But Peter's response is again on the personal level. In fact, he becomes a little angry. He must be thinking what Jesus thinks of me. He's stupid or something. I have said I love you. And now he is asking the same question again. He must have felt a little angrier. But he again uses the same word, philo. In anger, you become even more unconscious. Now he cannot hear what Jesus is saying. He cannot see who Jesus is. The question being asked again has disturbed him. He misses again. The third time Christ accepts Peter's lack of understanding and uses the word philo himself. Why? Because Jesus sees that he will not understand that state. He has never tasted of it. It is beyond him. When the master sees you cannot come to him, he has to come to you. When he sees you, he goes on shouting, calling, and you don't come, then he descends into your darkness to hold your hand and take you from there. Jesus uses third time the word philo, and Peter, aggrieved by the insistence, protests his love even more earnestly. He must have become even more angrier. Why Jesus is asking again and again? And I have answered it. Is there some kind of suspicion in Jesus' mind? Has he some doubts about my love? All these questions must have arisen. He goes on missing. Even philo. Jesus has come very close to his understanding. But there also. Now he is so angrier that Jesus is standing just by his side holding his hand. But he cannot see. He goes on declaring, I love you. But this declaration is his egoistic declaration. Christ says gently, go and feed my sheep. It is no use. Jesus says, I will have to wait for another time. Right now, it is not going to happen. The master sometimes has to wait for years. And the disciple, on the one hand, wants it to happen,
and on the another hand goes on creating all kinds of hindrances, obstructions. But that too is natural, because how can you expect more from an unconscious mind, from a mind who has not known what consciousness really means, who lives in a dark dungeon and has never seen any light. And you go on talking about love and light. In compassion, Jesus says, okay, Peter, so you go and feed my sheep. You forget about it. Right now is not the right time. I should not have asked in the first place. I will have to wait. Maurice Nicole, one of the disciples of George Gurdjieff and one of the most significant disciples, says, as we cease to invent ourselves, so we cease to invent other people. We begin to feel a common existence which is without passion and is simply what it is, without further definition. When you stop inventing yourself, your ego is your invention. When you stop inventing yourself, when you stop creating a false pseudo-personality around you, when you just start being whatsoever you are, when you start relaxing into existence, as we cease to invent ourselves, so we cease to invent other people. The both things go together. If you are inventing yourself, you will be inventing others too. You go on creating a very beautiful image of yourself, and correspondingly you go on creating beautiful images of other people. Neither your image about yourself is true, nor your image about other people is true. So you live in a kind of illusion. And again, you are frustrated because nothing comes according to your image. It cannot come. Your image is just your invention. It is not the truth. Maurice Nicole is right. He says, when we stop inventing ourselves, we stop inventing others. And then suddenly there is a common ground, a common existence. Passion disappears, and when passion disappears, compassion appears. The meaning of the word compassion is to have such intense passion that passion itself burns out of that intensity. So intense that it burns itself and disappears into fire, fire of its own intensity. Then there is a totally different kind of love, compassion. It goes on severing from you, goes on in ripples continuously, day and night, year in, year out. And whosoever is ready to partake of it can partake of it. Whoever is ready to receive and digest, can digest and be fulfilled through it. Then it flows for all things. In the very fire of passion, compassion is born. Out of passion, compassion is born. Sex cannot contain love. Love cannot contain prayer. But love exists into sex like a child exists into a womb, or a bird exists into an egg. The egg protects for a time while, then it hinders. Then the egg has to be broken. then the bird has to come out and fly into the sky. Sex is one egg in which the bird of love grows. Then the bird itself, love itself, is another egg in which prayer grows. And then prayer has grown to its utmost. Only God is, you are not. Then wherever you are in the temple. Then whoever you are utterly blissful. That is the meaning of heaven. That is the meaning of the kingdom of God. So Jesus says, first go and be reconciled with your brothers. Be reconciled with the creation. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. The question is not of committing something. The question is of thinking. This is the difference between crime and sin. Crime is that which you have committed. Sin is that crime which you have been thinking. Crime is that sin which has become actualized into the world of things. You have done it. You have exposed it to the world. Sin is that crime which you are nursing within yourself. Jesus says, if you think in terms of lust, you have already committed adultery. The law of Moses says, don't commit adultery. That is one of the commandments. But it only prevents you from action. It does not say anything about thought. It only says how to relate with people. It does not say anything what goes on in your dreams. Jesus says that is not going to transform you. You can be absolutely moralistic from the outside, and deep inside you may contain all the snakes and all the scorpions and all the poisons of the whole world. Real problem has to be there. What does he mean? Does he mean that don't look at a beautiful woman? That's not possible. He cannot mean that. Because if he says, look at the lilies in the fields, how can he say that don't look at a beautiful woman? If lilies are beautiful, then why not a beautiful woman or a beautiful man? If lilies represent God and His beauty, then man represents God at a higher point. Woman represents the most beautiful phenomenon in the world. Jesus cannot say that. Then what He is saying, try to understand it. You see a beautiful woman. If you enjoy the beauty, the form, the way she walks, the grace around her, you are simply thrilled, great awe. You are thrilled by God's beauty in her. There is no lust. Lust enters only when you see a beautiful woman and immediately you start thinking how to possess her. Thought is the culprit. Desire is the culprit. When the thought comes how to possess her, how to have her,
How do we snatch her away from others? Then you have become ugly. Violence has come in. Do you know from where this word violence comes? It comes from the same root as violation. You have violated a certain law of God the moment you think of possessing. It is a profanation. The beauty was immense, but you have profaned it. You have started thinking how to use it. It is as if you see a flower and you start thinking how to take it, how to steal it, or how to take it away and sell it in the market. This is a violation. This is a profanation. Hence, it is violence. When lust arises, the desire to possess and exploit, then the beauty is lost. Then you have already made the woman ugly in your heart. It was so pure. It was so beautiful. It was such a splendor to see. Now you have destroyed everything. And rather than enjoying it, rather than being thrilled by it, rather than being in rejoice about it, now you have become worried. What to do? Because she belongs to somebody else, somebody's wife. Now you will be disturbed. Rather than being enhanced and nourished by her beauty, now you will be disturbed and you will start thinking how to take her away, what to do. You miss the whole point. A door was opening through her beauty. You missed it. Otherwise, you would have seen God there. Jesus is not saying that become insensitive to beauty. He cannot say it. I can watch for it. He cannot say it. Not with his saying what Christians have been teaching to the people. He is a man of immense sensitivity, of great love. How he can be insensitive to beauty? It is not possible. He is simply saying, don't lust, enjoy. And there is no need to enjoy anything by possessing it. In fact, how can you enjoy something once you possess it? Very possession, and the beauty is destroyed. You have poisoned it. You have corrupted it. That's what adultery is. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. This has been misinterpreted by neurotic people down the ages. There have been people who have cut their genital organs. Christian saints. There have been people who have taken their eyes out according to this. Man seems to be so stupid. But these people have been revered and respected. They have been sanctified. They have become saints. These were simply neurotic people, hysterical people, and utterly stupid. This is not the meaning. This is just a way of saying that the part has to be sacrificed for the whole. The whole cannot be sacrificed for the part. That's all. It is just a way of saying that if you find that any part of your being is creating a disturbance between you and the whole, it has to be sacrificed. And as far as I know, any part that has any pretensions to be the whole is the disturbance. And that is your only mind, nothing else. Your mind only pretends that I am whole, sufficient unto myself. The mind is the only pretender. It gives you the idea of separation, of ego. Jesus is saying, sacrifice the parts. If it is your head, sacrifice the head. It does not mean cut your head. It simply means bow down, surrender your head. If it is your mind, your thinking process that is creating trouble for you, sacrifice it. It is not worth. For the whole, everything has to be sacrificed. Only then you will become whole. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. The greatest saying of Jesus, ye resist not evil. And it has been said of old, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That is the concept of law, justice. Jesus brings love. He says, resist not evil. Why? This looks very strange statement. Resist not evil? Then evil will grow if nobody resists it. The meaning is a very, very different meaning. It is concerned with the inner alchemy. And the same is the meaning in Jesus' prayer, in which he asks, give us our daily bread. Hindus and Mohammedans and others have been laughing about the Christian prayer. It looks so childish, give us our daily bread. Could not Jesus think of anything else? Asking for the daily bread. But these people don't know what he means by the daily bread. Jesus says, as your body exists through air, food, water, your soul also gets every day a certain nourishment from God. That is your daily bread, daily nourishment. You get every day a certain quantity of spiritual energy. Now, you can do with that energy destruction or creation. If you do destruction, then you will be misusing it. That will be violence, violation, profanation. If you use it in a creative way, it will become your path towards God. It will grow into you to higher peaks, altitudes. It will bring a plenitude in you, a pleroma. God's energy that goes on showering on you is what he calls the daily bread. If this energy is not properly used, but is squandered in useless and destructive activities, then God goes on giving you, and you go on throwing you, not knowing what you are throwing. It happened, a Sufi parable. A man came to the river early in the morning for a morning walk. He stumbled upon a bag. He opened the bag. It was full of stones. Sitting on the bank, just playfully, he started throwing those stones into the river. He enjoyed the splash of those stones. By and by, it became more and more light, and then the sun started coming up. The last stone was left. Then he looked, because now there was light. And he started beating his chest and crying and weeping. And some people gathered and they asked, what is the matter? He said, this is a diamond. And I have thrown
thousands for 1 hour continuously I've been throwing, not knowing what I'm throwing. I was thinking these are just the stones, but only the last is left. But I say, even he was fortunate, at least he became aware when the last was left. Millions of people are not aware, even at that late stage. They simply go on throwing. They live and die, and they don't come to know ever the daily bread, the diamond that descends in you every day. It is your energy. You can put it in anger. It is the same energy. You can put it in love. It is the same energy. It is your choice. That's why Jesus says, resist not evil. Because if you start resisting evil, your whole energy will go into resistance. There is much evil. It is not a moral teaching. It is an alchemical teaching. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. But don't waste your energy. If he wants to hit you, he has already hit you, give him the other cheek too. And say, thank him. Thank you, sir. And if you need sometimes again, I will be ready. And go on your way. Don't waste your energy. Because that energy is so precious. Just in retaliation, reaction, fighting, anger, don't waste it. You will be throwing diamonds. We live in a constant inner atmosphere of objecting, complaining, condemning, no saying. Saying no, and we go on missing that is just in front of our noses. This constant objecting inside, this is not right, that is not good. Things should be like this. Things should be like that. Much energy gets involved into this objecting. And we start putting things right. And life is short. And life is fleeting. And never anything is being put right. Simply, we drown ourselves into our activity. Jesus says, be aware, your energy is precious and you have only a limited amount of it available. More will become available if you use this amount. Jesus says, those who have will be given more. His statements are the most beautiful ever made.